Bob Reed, ooh, quite a belly button.
I'm the demographic for X-Lax.
For a new Ford, make it Bill Curry, Tampa Bay's first family of Ford for over 60 years. At Bill Curry, our prices are better than good. They're the best, and they're right up front with our $5,000 best price guarantee. That's right, Bill Curry will meet or beat any Ford dealer's best offer or give you $5,000 cash. Shop our huge selection of new Fords, then get the lowest price, the best price, or we'll give you $5,000 cash. Only at Bill Curry Ford, located on Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
Our thanks to Bill Curry Ford for their presenting sponsorship of the Ira Kaufman Podcast and all of Ira's work at JoeBucksFan.com. All 2019 vehicles at Bill Curry Ford must go. They are clearing out for new models. Pricing is slashed to incredible lows. Their nationwide lifetime warranty is in place. New and pre-owned vehicles. And don't forget your trade-in will be a year older on the first of the month. Get the most for it right now at Bill Curry Ford. Start shopping at BillCurryFord.com or head to the dealership just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry. And if you catch General Manager Sean Sullivan, you can always email him. Ask him for that extra discount you'll get for being a fan of Joe Bucks Fan or Ira Kaufman. Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford for nearly 60 years. Every Thursday night is unlimited bowling for $10.99 at Pin Chasers, all three Tampa area locations, starting at 9 p.m. And enjoy $1 Miller Lights while you bowl. Free shoes all the time at Pin Chasers. Great food, great fun. Get to pinchasers.net to reserve a lane. But it's not just Thursdays. Every day is a daily special at Pin Chasers. You can get to their website and see them all. But Sunday, we love the pre-Buccaneers breakfast bowl from 9 to 11, $9, and it includes breakfast. How could you beat that? Great time with the family before you settle in for football for the day. Pinchasers.net. And a reminder, Bucks fans, watch the Bucks all season long at your local Buffalo Wild Wings location. Great fun, great food, great scene. And Ira Kaufman's road tour continues. There's one more week left. The Bucks will be on the road against the Lions. Get the schedule at JoeBucksFan.com. But Ira will be at the Sarasota location. Lots of fun. That's how we'll be closing out his road tour. Buffalo Wild Wings, we appreciate their support. And have a lot of fun. Watch the games there.
Yeah. Here once again, another Bucks win. And, of course, yeah, we're joined by the custodian of Canton, the king of the town, I can't say, the sage of Tampa Bay sports.
See, I was thinking very strongly of picking the Bucks against the Jaguars. I decided parts of Buck Nation say I'm a jinx. Don't do it, Ira. So, of course, I take the Jags, and my record slips to 3-9. And now I'm facing the Colt game, where the Bucks are 3.5-point favorites, Lee. To me, that's a little high.
Yeah.
Because the Colts are still fighting over there. But anyway, you just wolfed down a burger. I think you took three bites. You knocked the whole thing off. It was outstanding. I had some kind of a shrimp taco, which was very tasty, I might say.
I think our listeners are more interested in the food you ate at Buffalo Wild Wings. Do you have another chocolate cake?
Well, I was down there yesterday in Bradenton. Good turnout. Only one more road game, which I believe is the 15th when the Bucks are in Detroit. I don't know if you're going up to Motown.
No.
But I will be in Sarasota that day. We'll talk about it more. Now, back to your favorite football team over here at the Kemper.
Well, you know, I got to say this. This has to be the only NFL podcast that has a Buddy Hackett reference.
You would hope so. Now, I'm gonna start with a story, because our listeners, it's an expanded group of listeners from Thailand to Temple Terrace. I'm adding listeners every week. And look out, Glenn Beck, because I'm coming up after you.
I think he's yesterday's news.
Yeah, on the Google Top 50.
He's eating your cinders, Ira.
Lee, I want you to picture this. My lovely wife and I driving up I-75 on our way to Palm Coast. It's a three-hour drive with no traffic. We get about 45 minutes out of town. We're a little north of Brooksville. And I look at my dashboard, Lee, and I see my right front tire is highlighted on the screen.
Technology.
And I think it's called PSI or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's 30. Well,
pressure per square
30
inch.
Seconds later, it was 27. 30 seconds later, it was 24.
Yeah. You get
it's going down and down. And I'm saying, uh-oh, the famous uh-oh. My wife goes, got a problem? Got to go to the bathroom? I said, I might shortly. Now it's down to 20. I see an exit in a town. Now, you might be familiar with this town. I hope some of our listeners aren't. Webster. Apparently, it's a little north of Brooksville.
Yeah.
Apparently, they're famous for some kind of a flea market. Well, I didn't make it to the flea market, Lee. I pulled out of Webster. I didn't know which way to go at the stop sign, but to the left is 301. Well, that's a major road. Now my PSI is down to 16. I decided to take the left fork. It was about a 5-mile ride. Meanwhile, the thing's going down steadily. By the time I got to 301, it was down to 4.
Wow.
And I pulled into the first driveway I saw off to the side of the road, and I got out of the car and looked at it. Flat as a pancake.
Mm. See, when you said Webster, for a minute there, I thought you were going to say it's known for its fleas.
No, there's a famous flea market in Webster. We pulled into a guy's, you know, kind of a driveway almost, and I managed to call AAA. I had no Wi-Fi, but I got a call out. That's how much in the middle of nowhere I was. While we're waiting, she goes, it's going to be about an hour. All right, so I sit in the car. You know, barely a car is going up 301. This is like nothing going on. That's Thanksgiving morning. Now it's about, you know, high noon. And and after a few minutes, the guy comes out of his driveway. Mm-hmm. You know, he lives in a
ramshackle hut.
Yeah, ramshackle place. He comes out and he's clipping his, you know, his vines are all climbing all over the place. I thought we were in the Amazon.
He's doing yard work on Thanksgiving.
He's doing yard work. He comes over. He's curious. What's going on? Hey, I got a flat tire. Want me to help boost you up? By the way, the guy had two teeth in his mouth.
Uh-huh.
I thought this was Deliverance Part 2. I didn't know what was going on. Next thing I know, my wife's raising her window. She's locking her door. And the guy, he wanted to boost me up. He goes, you got a spare? I said, yeah. My wife goes, why don't you put the spare on? What do we need AAA for?
Yeah.
I said, I'm in my Sunday best. I can't get all greased up over here. And meanwhile, paying for AAA, I might as well wait for AAA.
Sure.
So my spare was one of those little donuts. So now it's 1 o'clock. It's been about an hour. The guy's getting antsy. He wants to boost me, you know, do that lift. I'm holding him off with one hand. And now I make the call to AAA with the other. And I get the woman. I go, I called an hour ago. What's going on? Because I can't get any progress reports because my cell phone's not working.
Oh.
I can't get any progress reports. So she gets on. She goes, let me check with the dispatcher. She gets back on the phone, Lee. I'm not making this up. She says, maybe another hour. And as she says that, and my wife's screaming at her, another hour! It's been an hour! The guy pulls up.
Wow.
So there's no communication. It's like the Buck secondary in October. There's no communication going on, Lee. So he did the thing and put the donut on. I'm still 100 miles away from my destination.
And those things are only good for about 50 miles, right?
Yeah, I damn sure ain't getting on 75 again. There ain't a store in the world that's open.
Yeah.
You know, it's 1 o'clock Thanksgiving, and I can't get another tire note anywhere. So I made my way up 301 to 40 and made a right turn and started going through Ocala Forest. Meanwhile, I'm going 40 miles an hour. Everybody's giving me the finger.
Oh.
Everybody. I think a couple of churchgoers were giving me the finger. And I felt like saying, I got a donut on. But anyway, we made it. The next morning, Friday morning, I'm in Palm Coast. Now I got to get the tire. The only store open, Walmart on Black Friday.
Oh.
Here we go again.
Oh.
I walk in at about 8:30 in the morning. There's 9 people in front of me in the automotive section. They're getting oil change. They're getting this. They're getting that. I walked out of there at like 2:30 in the afternoon. It was a nightmare.
Oh.
At the camera. But then I went down to Bradenton on Sunday and watched the Bucks. And by the way, your football team is playing good football. They've won 3 of 4. I believe that's the first time since 2016.
Wow. Yeah.
They've won 3 of 4.
When they had a 5-game winning streak, yeah.
And Lee, it's not far-fetched to think they're going to win 3 of the next 4.
Well, I'm not trying to play contrarian. I'll get to that real quick. I want to tell you a quick story about my travels. I told you I got stuck in holiday traffic, and it took me 3 hours to get to Ocala.
And this is on Saturday.
It was on Saturday morning. And no, it was not football traffic. It was the morning. Kickoff was at night. I only saw one Gator flag the whole time, so no, people, it was not Gator flag. Anyway, coming back, the names shall not be mentioned to protect the guilty. Stopped at a biscuit place. You know, it's almost the Christmas season, past Thanksgiving, and they always ask you, instead of what's your name, they always ask dumb questions, like, what's your favorite band or whatever. Meanwhile, half the people in line in front of them are like, oh, I don't know, and they're sitting there, you know, it's like, come on, just say it. Once before, I had one of those stupid questions. There was a line. I always feel guilty when there's a line behind me. You're asking me one of these dumb questions, like, just say my name, because there's people waiting to get fed here. Just say my name. I'm not hiding from the racket. Just say my name. We'll be fine. So anyway.
You're not the Irishman.
Anyway, the question they asked me was, what's your favorite Christmas movie? And just to be a smart ass, I said, Patton.
Oh.
And she.
And the guy goes, what?
No, no, yeah. Well, it was a girl, and she said, oh, Pat. I'm like, no, I'm not a Pat. Patton.
Like, as in the general.
Yeah.
Now, Lee, before we get into this Bucks game, which we.
No, that's a good Christmas
that's
music.
A nice one. Now, we're going to get into the Buck game, but you were in Jacksonville. You were there. You called it a jubilant locker room. But at halftime, you have a little anecdote that you're going to have to clean up a little bit, but it involves Dan Lucas from FLA Channel 8 in Tampa, who happened to be at the game, and at halftime, he decides to take a whiz in the men's room. And
which is really immaterial, but okay.
And who does he see at the adjoining urinal?
Well, it wasn't Rachel Watson.
Who does he see?
Tom Coughlin. You know, Mr. Jacksonville Jaguars, Mr. Tough Guy.
Director of Football Operations, okay.
Who's probably going to be unemployed in a couple of months. For people, if you've ever gone to a Rays game, when you go to the restroom, they have the radio feed piped in so you can listen to what's going on with the game while you're taking care of business. Similar situation here, but again, this is halftime. Nick Foles was awful, and I credit the Bucs defense. The six possessions the Jaguars had in the first half, driven by Nick Foles. Fumble, interception, fumble, three and out, three and out, three and out.
Can't do much worse.
That's a brutal first half. And to credit the Bucs defense. So anyway, at halftime, Lucas goes to take care of business. He's had quite a few coffees. And who saunters up next to him? Tom Coughlin in the adjoining stall. And they're piping in the radio feed. And the guys at halftime on the Jaguars radio network are apparently hammering Nick Foles, hammering Marone, hammering Coughlin. How could you sign this guy, this Foles? How could you pay him this much? Why are you playing him? Why isn't Minshew out there? Just pounding this guy. And Lucas said, meanwhile, Coughlin next to him, not in a loud voice, but in a voice that he could hear. Every time somebody would say something, you know, how could you sign this guy? How could you play this guy? Why isn't Minshew? Tom Coughlin, F you. Oh, F you. F you. Yeah. So basically, Coughlin was talking to the radio broadcast feed and effing him off every now and then.
How was that Buck locker room, Lee?
Well, it was jubilant. I did not come away with that game very, very content with the Bucks play. And I'm sure there's people running off the road. Or they're saying, you're going to be Mr. Negative.
Wait a minute. You were content with one half of their play.
Defense played excellent. That defense bailed that team out. You take away those turnovers, and I've always said turnovers are random luck. You can't bank on him. You can't plan on him. That's one reason why Lovey's not here. He planned on him. Well, you can't plan on them. They're, you know, it's almost like a game of chance, turnovers. If not for those turnovers, I don't know if the Bucks win that game.
Now, Lee.
I'm honest when I say that.
Lee, I understand your point about the capriciousness of turnovers, but I feel compelled to add this. Every year, New England's plus 15.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every year. Now, part of that is Brady doesn't turn the ball over. But as a general rule, they're always in the good column.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for the last 15 to 20 years, and it's really fueled their dominance. So with New England, it's not a coincidence.
Well, there's a couple things working there. Number one, I think it's folly to compare anything to Belichick. He is so far ahead of everybody, it's just not fair. That'd be like comparing Manute Bol playing against some high school team. You can't do that. That's not fair. Number two, I think, going back to Belichick, I think he is just so, so smart that he knows how to put guys in the proper position. But he's playing on a different level. He's just that good. Anybody else, they're mere mortals. But still, it's a game of chance. I mean, Belichick doesn't know how many interceptions and or fumble recoveries he's going to have Sunday. He doesn't know. He might have half dozen, he might have two. He doesn't know that. Bucks, if they don't make those turnovers, which, by the way, remember the stat that I go by? Net sacks? Those fumbles were caused by pressure. And you take away that pressure, you take away those fumbles and a pick, I don't know if the Bucks win that game. And I'm being very honest. The offense was not good. It was, I guess you could say, it was efficient. They did take advantage of the short fields, and I give them credit for doing that. But when they had a regular, like, you know, they took a punt or they took a kickoff, they really didn't do anything. So I'm not so sure. You take away those turnovers, I'm not so sure the Bucks win that game. And the Jags are, you take away their defensive line, that's a terrible team.
How'd Josh Allen look?
I really didn't pay a whole lot of attention to him. I'm more concerned about the Bucks. I'm more focused on the Bucks. And you know, there's like anything, Ira. During training camp, you always get people on Twitter like, how did so-and-so look? How did so-and-so look? Well, there's 90 players out there, and you only got two eyes.
Now, Lee, I've been given a request by a very learned and rabid Buck fan. And the request is to, when you do the podcast, I want you to ask Lee DeKemper this very pointedly. And let's see if DeKemper has the guts to do it.
I don't remember her name.
So I... It was 1986, and you had a couple of drinks. Lee, here is the request. This person wants you, and the word is, to apologize. Now, that's a strong word.
I think I know where you're going.
About your remarks about Devin White, the drafting of him, how they could have had different guys, and a middle linebacker in the grand scheme of things is not going to make such an impact on your defense. This person wants an apology. Are you prepared, Mr. DeKemper, to apologize about your previous remarks about young Mr. Devin White, number 45?
Absolutely not, because I'd be fundamentally dishonest if I did. I believe a pass rusher is far more valuable than a middle linebacker. I said it then, I'll say it now, I'll say it till I die.
If they're equal players.
Pass rusher, pass rusher, pass rusher. What I was just talking about, net sacks? Look at the 49ers. Outside of Richard Sherman, name someone in the back end, or, you know, the second and third levels. You know, Kawhi Alexander's hurt. Name someone in the second and third levels that are studs. But that defensive line, man.
Buck fans are waiting for you to commend Mr. White.
I have. They apparently don't read Joe Buck's fan. I don't know how many positive things I wrote about him Sunday. I talked, and I haven't written it yet, I talked to all kinds of offensive players, and my angle was, you got a first front row seat at what Devin White did and what the defense did. Tell me your reaction. What was going through your mind when you were watching these guys do that? I haven't written it yet. I haven't transcribed it yet. I will.
How good a player is Devin White, Lee?
He's turned a corner, and I think he might be damn good. And that's two different arguments. I never, ever, ever suggested he would be a lousy player. And in fact, when the Bucks did draft him, even though I was upset about it, I wanted him to be an all-star, just like O.J. Howard. I've written all kinds of stories defending O.J. Howard. Was that a luxury pick, and should they have drafted someone else? Yes, they should have. I'm glad he's on the team. Anybody that's wearing a Bucks jersey, I want those son of a guns to be all pros. But I would be intellectually and morally dishonest if I said I didn't want someone else, and I'm going to apologize because the Bucks drafted Devin White. He's on the team. I want him to have success, because if he has success, that means the Bucks have success.
Well, may I point out how Josh Allen's really galvanized the Jacksonville defense, Mr. DeKemper.
Has he galvanized it?
I said that in sarcasm.
Well, he's doing good for a rookie.
They've lost four in a row. They're falling apart.
Well, their defensive line's good, Ivor.
Lee, I don't need a crystal ball to say this. I see a lot of green coming Shaq Barrett's way, and so do you.
From somebody.
From somebody. He's got 14 and a half sacks. He is number one in the league. If I would have told you in August that now, I said Shaq Barrett. Remember we picked three things about the Bucks. I said Shaq Barrett was going to lead the Bucks in sacks. But I said with seven. That's what I said. Now, give me credit for saying he was going to lead them.
Yeah.
I said all summer that it was a good pickup. But not in my wildest dreams did I think he could be leading the league and on pace for like 18 sacks.
Which would be a franchise record,
would be a franchise record.
Yeah, even Arians said that. No one saw that coming.
Lee, he wants to be paid. Who's his agent, Lee?
Rosenhaus.
What do you know about Rosenhaus?
I know he's oily Drew Rosenhaus, and he always gets paid.
Is he going to take some kind of a bargain, Rosenhaus?
No.
Or is he going to say...
Only way they're going to get a bargain, I use these open air quotes with my fingers. Only way he's going to get a bargain, or the Bucks are going to get a bargain, is they franchise. Tell you what, Sean Sullivan, our good friend over at Bill Curry Ford, the first family of Ford of Tampa, he called me when I was coming down here, and we were talking about the Bucks. Man, do they have some financial decisions to make. Major.
They haven't been in this kind of position in quite a while.
No, they have not. I mean, there's going to be some good players walking away from One Buck Palace for good in a few weeks here. It could be Cam Brate. It could be Sue. It could be Shaq.
What
could
about
be James.
What about that line that the Glazers told me years ago during our sit-down during the March
line.
Meetings? We've never lost a player sort of, you know, that we wanted to keep and seen him go to free agent.
Is that going to be tested this offseason?
It's definitely going to be tested. Chandler Jones is going to make $16 million next year. He's got more tread on his cleats than Shaq Barrett. And Barrett's got more sacks than Chandler Jones, who's a very good player. Now, he's got $16 million because he's got a long resume, and Barrett doesn't. You put it past Rosenhaus to say that's my bottom line? You start with $16 million? Can they afford to lose Shaq Barrett?
I don't know how to answer that. In theory, heck no. But I don't know if they have a plan B. And what I'm about to say is another devil's advocate. I'm not advocating it, I'm just throwing it out there. You know, Rosenhaus is like, oh, he's not going to sign for anything less than $16 million. And Rosenhaus doesn't control anything when you put the franchise tag on him. So that lock, stock, and barrel, it's done deal. So that option is there, but man, do you want to do that? Because you don't know if it's a fluke. I don't think it is, but I don't think you could expect 14 sacks.
Well, doesn't that take the option off Winston too, if you wanted to go that way?
But here's another thing that's really worrisome about the financial issues they're going to be facing in a few weeks here. Offense has figured out Shaq Barrett. When JPP was hurt and he was gone, and it was just Shaq Barrett, and he went wild, they figured him out. He was shut down for a couple weeks. Then JPP came back. All of a sudden, by the way, Carl Nassib is healthy. It's pretty obvious that teams know that it's a pick your poison kind of thing. They can't cover all these guys, that someone's going to get loose, whether it be Barrett, whether it be Sue, whether it be JPP, whether it be Nassib. Somebody's going to get to the quarterback. This is a real short sample size of when Shaq Barrett didn't have any help. Was those two games a fluke? I tell you what, Jason Light is going to earn every penny of his salary this offseason because he's got to make a lot of significant
decisions. Well, a lot of
decisions.
Buck fans don't trust Jason Light to make those kind of decisions.
I know they don't. This is very much a T-intersection of the Bucks' near future because Jason Light's got a hit on a lot of decisions.
And they may not have a very high draft pick. They may draft in the middle somewhere. Or what if they finish 8-8? I mean, you know.
Yeah, middle of the pack. Yeah. If Jason Light makes two bad decisions this offseason, this team could go in a spiral. I don't envy the guy. There's a lot of big-time decisions he's going to make.
They did a lot of things well. By the way, a sneaky big play. Big, big play in Sunday's game. What a punt from Pinion.
That was sneaky.
From his end zone.
I didn't even remember that until I read your column.
63 yards, yeah. And they get a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
They got the ball on their own 30.
Yeah.
They were punting from their end zone.
They were done.
I mean, that's big.
Yeah, that was it.
And there was still 5 minutes left.
Yeah.
I mean, that game wasn't over.
No, but technically it was because they weren't moving the ball.
Yeah, they weren't. Well, once they didn't score from the one.
Yeah.
That was it. Pinion's leading the league, I don't know if you knew this, by a wide margin in touchbacks. He's number one in the league.
I try not to think about kick punters.
Well, but I'm saying on touchbacks, not punts inside the 20. This is on the kickoffs. So guys are not getting to run the ball out of the end zone.
Okay, that's enough about punters. We don't want to chase people away, Ira.
There you
people
go,
know,
my friend.
Punters are evil. They're Satan.
It's the first time we mentioned them on a podcast.
And let it be known to be the past. Yes. You mentioned this in your column. Your column went up Monday morning. I had mentioned this in my Monday morning story as well, the five things story. I have to apologize. Someone Twittered me this Sunday, and Steve and I, under Joe Bucks fan handle, we get hundreds of Twitters on game day, hundreds. And I didn't save this Twitter, and I didn't jot it down or email it to myself, so I can't remember who sent it to me. I apologize. But it was a very interesting point. I want your feedback on this. This guy maintained that when Vernon Hargreaves got cut, the Bucks secondary turned the corner.
When I kind of mentioned that in that column.
You referenced that. Yeah, the Bucks got burned against Saints. Dean didn't play for reasons that are still fishy to me. But since Hargreaves got benched and eventually was cut, the Bucks secondary has played almost a complete 180.
I don't think it was a coincidence. Now, you could argue it was the message sent by Arians to the rest of the team.
That's what Sean Sullivan said.
Yeah, he said another one yesterday to Rojo.
Uh-huh.
In terms of accountability, look, it's not easy, especially for a Jason Light in a conversation with Bruce Arians when Arians says to Light, Hargreaves has to go. He's got to be released. That's not easy for Jason Light. Hey, what are you talking about? He's not playing that bad. He's got to go, Jason. If the Glazers could have stepped in at that point. I'm sure they were told what mm-hmm. was going on. They could have stepped in, but they weren't going to because they watched Hargreaves like you and I watched Hargreaves. Was there any reason to defend Hargreaves at that point? He's got to go. Even though there was investiture. In the wake of that, everybody's playing better. Passes are contested. That's the one thing that you and I keep talking about and the one thing we didn't see for 8 weeks or 9 weeks. Passes are being contested. Hey, mm-hmm. if Michael Thomas makes a great catch, he's going to catch 140 balls.
Yeah, you doff your cap.
You doff your cap. But I don't want to see, you know, clowns wide open.
Like the Jaguars. What, DJ Chark?
Now, Lee, the Bucks did a lot of good things Sunday, and you would
defensively, you would
add a chronicle it. But I'll tell you one thing. It's still nagging me. It's still bothering me. And it's starting to bother you a little bit. We got to get our handle on this. They don't run the ball well. They still average 25 running attempts a game, and they can't get 100 yards. What's going on?
Well,
they're down to 3.7.
I'm going to let your listeners...
I am tired of the 3.7, Lee.
I'm going to let your listeners, and I'm going to let you in on some behind-the-scenes communication at JoeBucksFan.com. In your column, you said the Bucks running attack, and I quote, a work in progress. So I copied that and I sent it to Izbitz and I said, work in progress, it's December.
I was trying to be kind.
Well, that's what Steve thought. Yeah. I said, it's December. And Steve replied, he goes, I was just trying to be kind, but he added to it. But in reality, there's been a work in progress for 4 years.
Yeah, it's 4 years. Half the games lead this year. Half the games, they don't have 100 yards rushing. And that's with Winston chipping in, 25 yards a game.
Yeah.
And they still can't do it. Look, Barber ran hard Sunday, but, not very effectively.
You love the effort, but that's high school and college nonsense. It's production.
Now you don't like to blame the line. I think they're part of it. But I'll say this. I don't see Adrian Peterson back there either. You're right.
Once in a while, can't the running back make his own holes, make his own runs? I mean, once in a while?
The rookie on the Raiders? He looks outstanding.
Yeah. No, that may not be a fair comparison because he was a late first-round pick. So that may not be fair because Barber was scraped off the street as undrafted free agent. And
Jones was a second-round pick,
but he struggled so bad last year. It looked very, very dark for him. If you can't run the ball, and the Bucks, if anybody, the Bucks ought to know what they have. They ought to be able to say, we aren't that good at the run because they see these guys every day. They see film. They see a whole lot more stuff than we ever will. So that, number one, it has to question their ability to recognize talent. Apparently they do believe because time after time, they pound the ball and they're expecting a 5-yard run, 12-yard, and it never happens, rarely, not never.
They never break a run either.
Never. If they are that convinced they have a good running game, and they clearly do not, someone's eyes need to be checked. If a guy in a bar watching on TV or a guy sitting in the 30th row can see, you don't have a good running attack, why can't these men and women now who will make 7 figures a year? Their player evaluation, that has to be brought into question, number one. Number two, this demonstrates what a poor running attack they have. They're facing the Jaguars, who gave up, 700 yards rushing in
horrible,
the three previous
horrible.
Games. They were missing their best starting linebacker, Miles Jack. And still the Bucks couldn't move it. Still they couldn't move it.
They're ahead. They're not behind.
Yeah, and they're trying and they're trying and they're trying and they're getting nowhere. And that right there, if people have some kind of belief that the Bucks have a strong running game, if that isn't evidence to tell you they don't, then I don't know what is.
We've been having this conversation, Lee, for 4 years. You are right. Mm-hmm. Since Carter was the offensive coordinator and had my man Charles Sims.
Yeah. I was told by someone who is not employed at one Buck, but has access to everybody.
Another unnamed source.
Yeah, I'm not going to out him. And he told me that Lovey had told Dirk Cutter when Cutter came in, and they already knew they were going to get Jameis, barring something whacked out happening. They were going to draft Jameis, and Lovey ordered Cutter, you do not put him in a position where he embarrasses himself. He's a young quarterback. Take care of him and run the ball. Because running the ball is a quarterback's best friend. Break him in slow. Or as Abraham Lincoln once said, let him up easy. And that was a direct order from Lovey.
Well, they had a hell of a running game when Winston was a
because
rookie.
Because Lovey ordered Cutter, you're going to have a running game. And if you remember, a couple times Cutter said, his first year here as offensive coordinator, he said Lovey wants to run the ball. People go bananas about Donovan Smith. Donovan Smith was a starting left tackle and he was a rookie. And he had a 1,000-yard rusher. How did that happen? I'm not saying Donovan Smith is Anthony Munoz, don't get me wrong, but if Donovan Smith was as horrible as some people say he was, how'd they have a 1,000-yard rusher with him as a rookie?
Well, also, Ali Marpet was on the team.
Damar Dotson was on the team, although you could argue Damar's past his prime. I always go back, how can you say this isn't a bad offensive line? I always go back to 2014, Lovey's first year, when the great Anthony Collins was left tackle, and he was so bad the Bucks told him to go home and not come back in December. Garrett Whoops, Gilkey, O'Neal Cousins, need I go on?
Boy, those are some names from the past.
That was a brutal offensive line. So that's why I'm not doing somersaults on US 19 and outrage over Donovan Smith because he's an upgrade.
If they go 6-2 in the second half of the season after a 2-6 getaway that buried all their playoff chances, First of all, I think they have a good chance to finish 8-8 because the only real quality team they're going to play is Houston. Houston's good. They're not Baltimore or San Francisco.
But they should look good against Patriots.
They did. Indy's still scrapping, but they're not. The Bucs are favored. What does that tell you? Detroit stinks, and Atlanta stinks. So, Lee, if they finish 8-8, I think most of Buck Nation is going to be very encouraged about 2020.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to forget the 2-6 start that took the air out of the whole balloon.
Yeah.
You can't give up on that. And I want to say this right now. For any of you Buck fans that are going to try to suggest to me that it was never going to be about 2019, don't waste your breath. I don't want to hear that nonsense. That is garbage. Bruce Arians did not come here to go 8-8. He did not. Bruce Arians knows that 8-8 is not going to make Byron Leftwich a rising star. but I'll tell you who is resurrecting himself a little bit is Todd Bowles. And
very
I've been very
so.
Critical about Bowles. I thought he had a terrible first 10 games.
I couldn't really unload on Bowles too much because the front sevens played well all season long. So it wasn't like his defense was totally horrible. But the secondary was bad. And all of a sudden, like I said, just like, you know, some genie came around. Like Barbara Eden blinked. And all of a sudden,
Barbara Eden, that's a good one.
I didn't realize it until I became an adult. My dad's favorite TV show for a while there was I Dream of Jeanne.
You thought it was the writing, didn't you, DeCamper?
Until I grew older, because the big controversy, you know what the big controversy with her, wasn't it? She's the first woman to show her belly button on TV.
Quite a belly button.
I was too little. I wasn't that much of a
pervert. Was it an outie or an innie?
You don't even know. But now I know why Homan loved that show. And I thought it was just Larry Hagman and his cohort, who was later on Bob Newhart.
I wouldn't say it's the second coming of Seinfeld in terms of writing, yeah. But now wait a minute. You're a man who loves Hogan's Hero, so we got to know where you're coming from over there. DeCamper, we're going to do the next one at One Buck Place. We'll have talk to Winston. We'll be in the locker room. We'll talk to Mr. Arians, who's got a little bounce in his step right now, Lee. So end it with one little scene in that locker room. Who had the biggest smile in the locker room, Lee?
Oh, they all had smiles, but probably the best quote I had. And I got a story for it. We'll end it on a story. I was talking to Sean Murphy Bunting. And you know what? He's really an intelligent kid. I mean, he gives you good stuff. And I know that I'm coming from inside baseball here. But he's really a smart guy. So was Alteron Verner. We won't go there.
That's right.
But Bunting was telling me at halftime, you know, teams bouncing off the walls. You know, they're pounding the Jaguars. Defense is playing lights out. And Sean Murphy Bunting said, more than a couple of bucks, vocally, said, we can't lose this game. We can't have happen what's happened before and let these guys back in the game. And I asked Sean, I said, did someone bring up the Giants game? He looked right at me. He said, that's a good example.
Absolutely.
that was my favorite quote.
And Lee, I'll end it with this. If they don't make that interception at the 1 yard line, we could be looking at another collapse because all the momentum was with Jackson.
Yeah, the crowd, all the momentum.
Minshew was playing pretty well.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Here's my story. You know, everybody's talking about the Irishman. I love it. I think Chris Russo is off his rocker. I don't care if it's 4 hours long. I don't care. College football, you've got a good college football game. You like it, you don't care if it's 4 hours long. That's entertainment. But anyway, mob movies and mob shows and Sopranos. Was there a better must-see TV, back-to-back TV shows? Roughly 15 years ago, when you had Band of Brothers and The Sopranos back-to-back.
I don't think you can beat that, Lee.
I thought you were going to say Newhart and Mary Tyler Moore.
Well, I mean, you got the 2011 Buck highlight tape. I'll see you Wednesday, Lee.